And Ms. Matthews, hey, you wanted to make a public comment, I believe, or?
I just wanted to, I guess, give a shout out or a.
If you would remind everybody who you are.
Okay. I am Dee Matthews. I'm the chair for Bridges Board, and we just got some wonderful news. Okay, we just were awarded a $9,909,000 loan from the USRDA.
Wow.
So we will definitely make our Boundary Campus, which is the former Boys and Girls Club in Buford, into a remarkable K-8 school. And it does also give us the ability to go ahead and make the purchase of property for the high school, which next year we will have a 9th grade. But because I do like sharing and paying it forward, I have some packets here from the USRDA that I'd like to leave with the board if you know any schools. And I've got the business card for Nikki Toombs, who really was remarkably, I mean, she was great in helping us get it done. And we did complete it in 9 months. And it is a lot of work, but it's a wonderful payment or gift from that hard work. And if you know of any schools that might be interested or might need, you know, that venue, to go that venue, which the loan interest is minute. If for somebody, and you all know this already, charter schools, we don't get schools. And we don't have the funding that comes with the normal public school system. And so therefore, you have to look at every avenue that you can seek to accomplish the excellence for, the pursuit of excellence for your school and its students. And that's really what we're doing. So I do have some packets that I'd love to leave with you all that have cards. And if you know of any schools that might need that assistance, great
day. Thank you.
So much.
Congratulations.
Thank you all for your support. That's
great news.
Yeah, we couldn't do it without you.
Just for the board's edification, I'm told that that the agency said that the application and the cover letter and whatnot was the most eloquent and the best application they'd ever seen. That there was no way that that could have been turned down. And we know how that works, too, because we've seen some that you couldn't turn down. So congratulations. Okay. We're now on information.
Can I make one comment
please.
About that? And Dee can correct me if I'm wrong. I was involved in that on the front end before I left that board, so I know a little bit about it. Initially, the school was looking at going through an entity that they would lease a building from that was going to cost about $600,000 a year. And the school could afford it, but they wouldn't have as much funds to put into the classroom. They'd have a pretty building, they'd have a pretty shell, but they'd be lacking more in the classroom. And the board, and I believe in their wisdom at that time, turned this entity down. They then went to the Boys and Girls Club, who needed to make a move. They worked out an agreement. The Boys and Girls Club financed the building for Bridges for a certain period of time. And then the school started working on this application. But the difference between what this school would have been paying on a lease at 10% interest a year versus this is going to save them well over $100,000 a year. That's going to go back into the classroom instead of into some REIT's pocket to pay dividends to investors.
That's so right.
That money will go back into the classroom. So that's a significant savings to the taxpayer.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. Okay, information items. Assessment results. Robin, you can't say much yet.
And the original was supposed to be released publicly today.
Right.
They postponed it today to tomorrow. Then with the weather conditions throughout the state and the Department of Medicine shut down, they updated it saying that the new release would be on October
20th. We'll get the board a copy of our summary of the data before it gets publicly released. And we'll make sure to get that in their hands.
Okay.
And then I'm hoping we can have a discussion about the data at our next board meeting. Go through that.
Paula, you're going to do an HR update?
Yes, sir. There is a document in your folders that will brief me about HR. Just kind of wanted to show you, and I think some people wonder why we actually have HR in the district office because we got so few district employees. So I just kind of wanted to let you know. when the district was first created, a few HR issues had to be resolved, and one was due to the fact that the employees of not only the district office but the schools were eligible for state insurance coverages. EIP, which was the Employee Insurance Program, which is now PEBA, the Public Employee Benefit Authority, was set up to work with districts and not individual schools, and they did not want to go that route. They only wanted one agency for all of our schools. This meant that now, with the regular traditional districts, it's no problem because the employees are employees of the district. But with us, we get a bill from PEBA, and it has everybody alphabetical every month that has to be sorted through and divided as to who goes to what school and how much to bill each school. I mean, it's a lot of fun. So we have to do that. And we also have a problem with the teacher certification renewals and things like that. The State Department of Education didn't want access given to each school to be able to do that for their teachers, so that had to come down to the district as well. Right now, we have approximately 1,350 people that are employed district and schools. This is approximate. I couldn't run an updated report. I have made some revisions, but the report, the system, has been down for a couple of weeks now. But that's going to be close. And that number depends on whether or not the schools have actually submitted all the information to me that they need to submit. Hopefully, they're doing that. Right now, we've got 1,004 people under insurance. And open enrollment is this month, so that could mean up to 1,004 changes with all the paperwork involved with that. I think it would be about 200, really, if it comes down to it. We had 361 new enrollees last year, and so far this year we've had 244. With all the forms and everything to go with that, plus everyone that enrolls has to be sent an initial cover letter, which confuses them to death, but it's a legality. And all it is an 8-page letter that says, you can get cover if you lose your coverage.
Right.
I mean, that's basically all it is.
Yeah.
I don't think that we will have as many this year because we only have one new school. But give us a little break. But there's constantly things going on. We're having to enter data for new babies, new spouses. When people terminate, then you've got the regular cover letter to send out to that, plus all everything that goes into the insurance system. So there's a lot going on with that. We had 239 terminations or transfers last year, and 92 so far this year. So all that goes with all that too. We also handle the flexible spending accounts and the money plus pre-tax benefits. The billing has to be done for all of that as well through the district and sorted out and then come up with the school's checks.
Is that a health savings account? Or is that
health savings account, medical spending account, dependent care account. And plus the pre-tax premiums. There's a fee for everybody that does that too. During the summer, if the school would ask me to, I try to go visit the school, especially if they've got a whole lot of new employees, and help with their enrollment for those new employees. York Prep wants me to come actually next week to help them with open enrollment. They have a new person that works with HR and she really doesn't know a whole lot yet, so I'm going to do that with them. With the teacher licensing, we also have not only the renewals, but a lot of people that haven't met their ADEPT requirements, they have to get an extension. And that has to come from the district, the request to do that. And we had 72 licenses renewed and 44 extensions last year, and so far this year, 78 licenses renewed and 32 extensions requested. Anytime a teacher is going to a school that is eligible for the teacher loan cancellation program, those forms have to come through HR and be signed off and sent to the loan people. Experience verifications from other states, as well as ours, go through HR and get distributed where everything's at. We also use Sarah, by Center for Educator Recruitment, Retention, and Advancement. We use their online job posting. So when a school says, I've got a job, I'll go in and post it online. And then if somebody asks about it, we download their application from Sara, which can be anywhere from 1 to 12 documents a person, and then send it to the school that wants, you know, to look at the applications. Last summer was a nightmare with the 9 schools. We had 7 pages at one time of postings on Sara, and there's 25 per page. So that was a lot of vacancies out there with a lot of people asking about a lot of the outlets. Luckily, Teresa helps me with those. Let's see. SLED reports. That's another thing done through HR.
Is that for the schools, too?
For the schools, too. Last year, we ran 1,267 reports, and we're currently at 642 this year. I think that number is going to go down. SLED has a new system, and you no longer have to have a logon to get SLED reports for people that are going to cost money anyway. I mean, if it's a volunteer, an office worker, anything like that, SLED charges $26 online to get that report. But now they can go online themselves, put their credit card in instead of me doing it over and over again. So I'm going to teach them how to do that soon. I'll still run the teachers and substitutes because those are free and we have to have a logon for those. But,
are board members involved in that?
Board members have to be run too. Yeah. And those cost
but that goes, oh, okay. That does, that's not the equivalent of like teachers and substitutes.
No, they're not free. They're
okay, so they do cost.
They do cost. Every year, Sara sends out an 8-page survey to collect teacher data. They want to know how many teachers were hired last year, how many teachers we still need. It's in all the different categories, elementary, middle, high, all the different subjects. It takes quite a while to compile this, but I send it out to each school and ask them to do theirs, send it back to me, and then I add everything together and send it to Sara, which we just submitted Monday. That report does go out, once they compile everything for the state, it goes out to the EFC and to legislators so they can see what's going on in the teacher world for the state of South Carolina. Also, we have to collect salary lists this time of year from all the schools. That has to be put into the insurance system. This is when they update the salaries to make sure that people are paying the right premium if they have supplemental long-term disability. So we have to adjust all the premiums in that system, as well as put new salaries into what we call the PCS system, which is the employee database, the Department of Education. And there's also a spreadsheet that has to be entered on. So those salaries are updated really 3 places this time of year every year. Another thing that we work on, the District Teacher of the Year, Students of the Year, and the Volunteer of the Year awards. Start sending out notifications early in the year, and then we, you know, go through all the logistics of picking who the winners are, and then we usually have the awards distribution around May, which Laura handles the banquet, so thank goodness. All schools have ID numbers, call them BEDS codes or SIDM codes. I request those whenever we get a new school, so that they'll have that just when they, before they open, so they can start ordering textbooks and things like that. And I send in changes if they've got an address change or grade span change or something like that. That has to go to them as well. Several times a year, I'll run a staff report and send it to the schools just to get them to verify that what they've sent me in PCS matches what I actually entered in PCS. And the leave balances for the district employees only, here again, thank goodness, that's handled in HR as well, and we put that on every month that goes on the pay stubs, so they know what the leave balances are for annual sick leave. And that about covers it.
What are you doing afternoons?
some of this and some of that.
Thanks.
So we're busy.
Could I ask a few
questions? Yeah, yeah. Wait, Paul, you got a question.
Sure. Questions. Just curious, and I know you just don't have it on the back of that sheet of paper, but in the future, I'm just curious, could I find out the number of employees who are on state, or number of schools who are tied in with the state retirement, versus the ones that have 401k?
Yeah, it's, well, some of them don't have anything, but...
Well, or, is it, or none, A, B, or C.
It's probably a little less than half of our schools are, but it's close to half, are on the state retirement system.
Okay.
But I can get that for you for sure.
I'm just curious, because I know what it costs. The flexible spending accounts, as I understand it, that's a great benefit for employees. Doesn't cost the school or the district anything.
Well,
it's all funded pre-tax dollars. Do you, or does the school district, when schools come on board, are they told about this initially so that they can sign up?
Well, they are when I go and do the meetings. They're supposed to be if somebody else is working with new employees too at the school. One of the catches was that until this year, until October, you had to be employed with that school for over, at least a year before you could sign up for that.
Okay.
And they wanted stability, you know, to show because the money's up fronted.
Right.
But starting in October now, anybody can sign up during the open enrollment session, brand new people, so they don't have to wait that year. So the word is getting out more now because everybody can do it.
And one other thing I noticed was the applications downloaded and sent to schools from the prior year to the current year, it's down 84%. Is that normal?
Well, this is only October.
When will it kick in?
I forgot to mention that. A lot of the times, if I'm swamped with something else, I will send those inquiries to Teresa Etheridge. And she downloads them for me and sends them to the school.
Okay.
And I did not count hers, but she has really, I mean, probably over the summer, she did the majority.
Okay, so that number will go up.
That, yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
Under professional development, I just wanted to remind everybody that we decided that December and January meetings we would devote pretty much exclusively to professional development. That gives Elliot some time to figure out what he would like to be involved in that. He and I are talking about all that. But I did last time ask if you had any input into those to please send me an email. I have not gotten anything. And I just want to remind you that I'd like for you to think about it. If any ideas, it's much more helpful if we know that we're doing things that people are think we need to do, but we don't know what those things are unless you communicate. Or I may have an idea, but you know. But if you've got some thoughts for that, I encourage you to do that. Or call me. It doesn't have to be an email. Just give me a call or whatever. I'd like some input into that. And that's really, I just want to remind you, December and January. Oh, were you going to see if Brian Carpenter could come one of those times?
Yeah, I talked to Brian, and he can come at any time. He was there four times. But I didn't give him a specific date.
I would suggest we do December. Good, huh?
I might talk about
that. Oh, really? Okay. Well, we'll let you know then.
Okay. Also, there's...
Whatever that means.
We'll talk about
okay.
this update, but there's a possibility of a hearing in December, too.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, whatever time we've got in December and January that isn't dictated that we do something else, that's what we'll do. If we have other things like a hearing, we'll get those out of the way and then go straight into this. And so, you know, maybe have a little bit longer meeting or something. But still, we're going to get into board development. I really think that we need to do that anyway, but with a change in the superintendency, we need to make sure we're all on the same page. So I'm going to now move into the superintendent's report. Elliot.
Thank you, Don.
Yep.
So second week on the job, so I don't have a full month's worth to report on. And I'd actually like to ask Wayne to give an update on just the pipeline of charter operators that we're looking at for this fall and those who are coming back to us.
Right,
I think
back.
That's really important. Okay, thanks. But before I do that, I just want to acknowledge it's been a tough week, you know, and I kind of want to shout out our team for being really flexible this week and just the communication going out to them and from them in Columbia, and also this board for just having the courage to get down here from wherever you are, and just want us to keep the emergency responders and everybody who's still working and people are still dealing with this in our thoughts and prayers. So it's just been a really, really unusual week, and I just want to kind of call that out and acknowledge that. So we're still dealing with it ourselves, and we may be a little slower to respond in the coming days, but our office was back open as of yesterday. I think a few people did make it in. Those who can't, aren't, we're asking people to use good judgment. I'll be back up there tomorrow, but we're trying to just get back to normalcy. So just want you guys to kind of know where we are with that. And schools update, I mean, it seems like our school's made out pretty well unscathed. I don't think, I mean, Wayne, Robbie, if you guys, I know, Robbie, you get the reports from the schools, but I think across the state, we were pretty lucky with our schools. Is that right?
Facility-wise, yes, sir.
Did our virtual schools have school?
Good question.
They did. Their offices were closed during the time, right, but they were still able to instruct.
Another benefit of virtual schools shining through. So I just wanted to cover two things. One, quickly, just hear from Wayne around kind of who's coming back to us, and then I wanted to walk you through this 90-day plan and just kind of walk through the highlights of each page, not go through it verbatim, but just kind of summarize it for you.
Okay. First of all, Elliot, I probably need to tell you that I'm leaving you a legacy of charters to my take on it was that charters with us have a contract for at least 180 days.
Okay.
So days that they miss, they still have to make up.
Okay.
That was my take on it. It was not the most popular take. In the world, but I feel strongly that we need to send a message that we're all about academic instruction. So, okay. You may have some residual.
Okay. Makeup days. Yeah. Okay.
Let's get the new guy.
We have.
I'm glad you brought that up. Do you want to? Should we wait until your report if we have an issue that we want to raise with that?
Either way, this is very quick. I'll just update you on and bring it up. Either way, I did meet with Elliot. Met with Camden Montessori. They did send in another application, so they will be. They'll go back through the process with the staff review. I think Elliot and I probably spent a couple hours with them one day. I also did go to Florence. I met with Furtis. They withdrew last year, or last couple months ago, and they have resubmitted. So we have to Camden and Furtis are potentially to be heard. Also, First Choice withdrew. They're the school from Walterboro, and they have resubmitted an application. So that's three schools that are in the pipeline. That doesn't mean all three of them will come to hearings, but those are three that are in the pipeline. Also, we've heard from Berkeley Palms. They came through as an IB school the first time, an international school the second time, and they've let us know that they are going to reapply in February. So, and I think they've asked for a meeting with Elliot. Also, I've told them that up through December, I'll be glad to meet with them and help them too. I'm working with a school in the Midlands area called Midlands Arts Conservatory. They have let me know that they plan to submit a letter of intent in February. So that's two we know of. We have an official letter from Felton Lab, and they have been approved by South Carolina State to transfer into the district, so that will be on a future agenda. Doesn't have to be right away, but that's being looked at. Elliot took the team down to visit Felton Lab.
Well, Wayne, does that mean that, does that have any impact or influence on South Carolina State being an authorizer?
I don't know. You would think it would.
Yeah.
But they still have a school that's been approved by them. Oceanside and Mount Pleasant has been approved by them. I have not had any formal discussions with the State Department, but they're looking at if Felton Lab does transfer. And, of course, we have the power there to accept or not accept Felton Lab. So.
Okay.
Talk about informal statements. We have heard, and I've heard this from a staff member at South Dakota State, that they've at least been approached by representatives from Gray Collegiate Academy that they may consider transferring, asking for a transfer to South Dakota State. But again, nothing formal there at all. So.
No better for you.
And Ron, would you like to chair a committee?
I figured
out
your name.
Volunteer to go speak to Jerome with me too.
And the last one is a Green School in Greenville has formally sent a letter requesting help with replication. They would like to replicate their school, and so that's in the works. And Dana was working on a replication application, and so. We promised we would help look at that process through the district. Okay, so that's kind of an update on schools that are in the pipeline to some degree. I think over the next few weeks, that'll be formalized through the staff and that week.
So are you saying that by the end of the year, we could have three?
We could have three. And if you count Felton Lab as a transfer request, we could have four. Mm-hmm. Now,
what do those numbers translate to as far as impact?
I'd be guessing right now if I gave those, but we can give you the potential numbers. Of course, you never know what it would be, but none of these schools are huge like York Trout. They're in the 300 to 400 range, the maximum, I would think.
Another couple thousand.
That would be factored into our budget request for the upcoming fiscal year.
Right. Mm-hmm. We did.
Some of these are in there already.
Request that Elliot sent in. We didn't send in, as we always have, an anticipated number of students with new transfer schools.
Some of these are in that projection.
Yeah, and I think maybe 900 seems like what we put in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Did you have a question, Ron, you wanted to come back to?
It had to do with the issue of makeup time. So should I wait till the
No, I think if you have a question about that.
I really think we should know where the board stands on that issue. I really support what Wayne said about expecting the days that are contracted. And I anticipate that, again, the legislature will, as they do every time there's a statewide catastrophic situation, they propose legislation to forgive lost instructional time. Mm-hmm. And educators, I think, we shoot ourselves in the foot in that we support that and we pressure for that, as if to say what we do isn't important. And if we really believe that we really need these kids and we need to have access to them to teach them, to get them to the goals that we've set, it's to me contradictory to believe you can take a position that instructional time isn't important. So, I know how one person feels. I don't know how we, as a board, feel on that. Probably the members of the General Assembly will be asking. I know when I was a superintendent, they used to ask, "Okay, where do you stand?" And I'd always say, "I don't support. We need that time. We need that. We don't have any time we can afford to lose. We can't give up any time."
I totally concur with that.
And do our schools have built-in makeup days? Don't I remember?
They have to have three. And they and we work with them. I mean, we work half days in some cases. I mean, we the schools that were really impacted up in the upstate, we really did try to work with them. But my stance on it wasn't a choice. They have a contract with us that said they will have 180 days. I totally agree with Betty and Ron that they're important days, but I thought it was a matter of there's a contractual obligation on their part.
Could I recommend, if somebody's so inclined, that we vote on a resolution expressing the sense of the board of what we think the stance we ought to take on that. Would that make sense?
I wasn't asking for that. I mean, it makes sense. I wasn't asking for that. I just want the superintendent to be comfortable in knowing what the board's mind is.
Well, I'm thinking if we pass a resolution, that copies of that could be sent to the chairman of the Education Committee in the House and the Senate or whomever might be the appropriate people. So at least publicly, we will have said where this district stands on.
Well, if that's what we want to do, I would propose such a resolution that all contracted and legislated instructional time be expected, even in the face of this catastrophic situation.
I think we all understand the sense of that. Is that a motion?
Yes.
Wait. Did I understand Robbie? Maybe I misunderstood Robbie earlier. Did you say that none of our schools were shut down?
Most of our schools took a few days hit. You know, we have a
big
pocket, in Talkeetna and the Low Country. So most of them have been shut. The ones in the Richland area, most of them will be out for the rest of the week.
Okay. Actually,
I need a second before we discuss. Okay, so does anyone want to second that?
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just want to make sure Kathleen will come over here and hit me with this. Okay. Kathleen, I think we all understand the sense of the resolution. Do you feel comfortable whether it passes or fails, but writing it in more resolution form?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded that we pass a resolution expressing the sense of this board that we think that all of the days that have been contracted with and are legislatively required be actually carried out. Any discussion on that resolution?
Well, before you vote, I'm prepared for this, but I hope all of you are. We really haven't started the winter.
Right.
And we don't know. So if we support this resolution, our schools could be going well into the summer. Mm-hmm. And so we need to understand that. I've heard that El Nino is going to be the strongest ever. Mm-hmm. And so we could have a very unusual winter. Even with that knowledge, I still believe that teaching and learning is as important as banking. Banks are going to figure out how to recoup that money they've lost while they've been shut down. We can't afford to not recoup the instructional time, no matter how much time that is. From my standpoint, I just want to be sure I haven't hoodwinked you because it's not over. I mean, there are going to be additional missed days.
Other discussion?
Yeah. Got a question. You make a good point going into the winter. Not so much where I live, but from Columbia up to Greenville area, you could have significant weather that would shut down for 3, 4, 5, whatever number of days. What kind of impact, budget-wise, on these schools, and then conversely, subsequently, the school district, would it have on budget? Because if they're already budgeted for 180 days, when these classes would be out, the teachers are still being paid, the administrators are being paid for those days. If they end up having to go, let's say 190, there's another 10 days times X number of schools. What they've got to be paid. Where does the budget makeup come in?
It would not be an impact on certified stuff. It would primarily be an impact on classified stuff.
If the classified staff is working during that time shutdown. But if they miss 5 days, they aren't paid for those days. Right. They're paid for 180 or 190 days that they're there. So it wouldn't impact.
So there is no, okay.
Other discussion? Okay. We'll vote. All in favor of the resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. You're still doing your superintendent
report? Yes, sir.
Right.
All right.
Unusual to have a vote during the superintendent's report. But
we're innovating. We're a charter school district. So, all right, we're down to the last item on the agenda here. I have, thanks to Laura, I've got copies of this presentation. I'll email you an electronic copy so you can see how I adhere to our branding standards as much as possible. But what I've tried to do here is basically just give you a simple sense for how I'm prioritizing my time, my first few months on this job. And so it's interesting because I know a lot of you are veterans and former superintendents, and there's kind of a template to these things. And I sort of wanted to throw the template aside. Because I think what so often happens is when people put together 90-day plans, it's almost like a project plan where they just plan to the end of the 90 days instead of thinking about why are these 90 days important to the whole year and to what happens next in the next 90 days and the next 90 days. And so what I try to do here without over-promising 2 weeks into the job is I try to actually map this out in connection with how I see my priorities for the entire year and things that I want to make sure we're setting ourselves up for next year. So my first 90 days are really, you know, the chance for me to come out of the gate strong and be ready for what happens next and build on what's going to happen next. So when you're looking at this, I'm not going to go slide by slide, but I want to call out a few of the slides. And if you go to slide 3, you'll see 3 things that if you look at public sector transformation and kind of think of organizations moving from good to great, there's typically 3 kind of success factors. You got to really nail these 3 things, right? And so what's the vision? Where do we want to go? What's our North Star? And, you know, I've already had one-on-ones with the staff, and I've already talked to a handful of the operators, and I think we just have a tremendous opportunity, this board, this charter community, to define that vision. The second thing is a plan. You know, how do we then articulate what we see as our end result in the form of our core strategies, our structure, our team? What are our objectives? What are we kind of mapping to week by week, month by month, quarter by quarter? So what does that plan look like? And then the third thing is, you know, and you see this written in different forms, but I think it's critically important that we're communicating and engaging everybody around both of these things, right? And so I want us to be really, really intentional around engagement and kind of leading this charge and making sure that all of our people are key communicators. And when I talk about improving communications, I'm actually not talking about Laura. I'm not talking about the person in that seat. I'm talking about our whole organization, me, the board, our team, our operators. How are we doing this with one voice around what this means for kids and where we're going? So I kind of start foundationally with those 3 things. And then the next slide, and I'll pause after just showing you this overview. This is kind of how I see just super, you know, 30,000 foot altitude. What do the next 9 months potentially look like? So on the left, you'll see, and I've got a ton of detail around that kind of get smart category, but you kind of see, you know, my first few months on the job, I want to just deeply learn. I want to listen. I want to learn from our staff, from you, from others, people like Mary in the room, our State Department friends, and I want to get very, very quickly up to speed and have the highest possible level of expertise around how our schools are doing. So student performance, subgroups, our kids, where are they? Where do we want them to go? I can't know really where I want them to go without really getting that strong baseline. What is the current state of our operations? How are we working right now? So deep diagnostics in my first few months. I also want to really work relationships. I want to, you know, this is my chance to be introduced to people and start off strong and the impression that I'm making and what I can learn from others who have been in this work. So really, you know, frankly, leaning on Wayne a lot, he's built a lot of trust. He's done a really great job around that. And so I want to really utilize that asset, you know, and the strengths that Wayne has around relationships and our team and this board there. So that's really, really important to me. And, you know, the other thing that I'm calling out is we've got a really complex structure in this state around how our charters get funded and facilities. And, you know, I want to make sure that I think about Dirk Bedford at Meeting Street Academy yesterday, and he said he, you know, he was talking to a school principal at a middle school about, you know, what's your program, what's your reading program. The guy had to stop and think about it and say, you know, and from that moment, you know, that guy had no credibility with him, and he didn't want to send his child to that school. Well, I never want to be the superintendent who gets a tricky or technical question about our funding, our operations, how we operate, how the state operates, and not know it. I want to know that. I want to be a preeminent expert on that. And so in order for that to happen, I need to be really intentional about how I use my time my first few months, who I learn from. And so that's both the state, the charter financing in our state, and it's our budget. I mean, I want to go through our budget. What are all the different pots of money? What are we spending them on? And really understand that deeply. So you'll see some deep diagnostics in that first quarter. And then, you know, if I'm successful in the next quarter, we develop a plan. So I work together with the board. And based on everything we've sort of baselined around our current state, we put a plan together. And we do set that vision. And, you know, frankly, I don't know what that vision is right now. I know a lot about quality schools for sure, and I think people in our hearts, everybody's mission driven, and I've been really impressed by that. But you know, do we want to increase by X amount the percentage of quality seats or number of quality seats in our state? Do we want to be innovators and we can see as a result of our innovation what happens in our schools and beyond them? Do we want to set goals around charter growth, or is it more about student proficiency, or is it both? So I just, you know, I also think of the clarity at Meeting Street Academy. They want their fifth graders to leave in the 85th percentile. That's their goal. I mean, that is stuck in my head probably till the day I die. I will know that at Meeting Street Academy, they want their kids to be in the 85th percentile. And what is that for us? You know, what is it for us? What does success look like? And so I actually put in bold the question of how do we define success in that, you know, my fourth to sixth month on the job, and we do planning, because I really want us to know what that looks like. And then I kind of see the last quarter of my first year is, then how do we start to execute on that? How are our structure and our systems and our people and the annual plan that we're then looking at 16 and 17, and we're saying, okay, what is this? What's the roadmap for success now that we said, here's where we want to be in 3 years, let's back map from there, and what does next year look like? And how are we just really geared up to have a successful year? And how does everybody on our team know, you know, their objectives over the short term, midterm, long term, and what we're doing every day, making sure that's aligned to that goal? So this is kind of if I just had to take a step back week two and say, throughout the course of this year, by the time we head into the summer, what are some of my major sort of themes of work and priorities? This is early thinking on it. And my opportunity for you today is I want your feedback, things you see here that you're allergic to in real time, something missing. But also, just I want to put this in your hands and have you look through it, take your time with it, give me feedback on it, because it is truly a rough draft. I want to walk you through just the 90-day specifics, but before I do, I want to stop here, and if there's anything you've heard so far that you want to react to or ask me questions about, I want to make sure I give you that opportunity. All right, I'm going to keep going. So if you turn the page, you'll see I basically map out six objectives. And I've touched on some of these, but this just gives you a little bit more activity level specifics on the right-hand side. So if you kind of think of these six things, and the first is leading with the youth agenda. You know, Ron, you said yesterday we were talking about, you know, what do you stand for? You know, just it's really important to know what people stand for. And you know, I think it's really, really important to make clear what I stand for and what we stand for. And so to me, that means being intentional around students, student work, student outcomes, and everything that we do, the decisions we make, the data that we're looking at. What's the face of the organization? What does our website look like right now? Will people go there and see students? Will they see stories of students succeeding? When you walk into our office, are you going to see that? You know, is that really truly the face of the district or the kids that we're serving? So I just want to, you know, there's a lot of complexity, and we're going to have good, healthy, vigorous, unguarded debate about how to do this and the mechanics of this work. But, you know, the bottom line is if we're doing our jobs well, kids are learning and they're doing really well themselves, they're going to be ready for college or careers when they leave our schools. And that is ultimately the bottom line. I think that's why we're all here and the partners that we work with are here. So if we can just lead and connect on that, I think we'll be good with figuring everything else out. So second thing is around just the financing and the budget. I want to become a true expert there. And actually want to thank Mary. She's already set up a meeting with the state CFO. It was incredibly helpful. I met with Melanie Barton. She said Lisa on her team is also just a budget wizard, and so I'm going to go meet with her. I'm going to just her version of that tutorial, and I'm going to do everything I can to just really deeply know and understand this so that I can then advocate for our schools. Like, I can be a smart advocate for what our schools need and how we're leveraging really scarce resources to make sure that the kids are learning really, really well in our schools. So that requires me to really become an expert there. And then stakeholder engagement. And this is where just, you know, who am I meeting with? How am I spending my time there? Who are the really major influencers? I want to be really smart about that. And then there's three more you'll see if you flip the page. And that's student performance and school performance. I really want to deeply understand where our kids are. And, you know, I've looked at a lot of the data from last year. I've seen this stuff. I've seen the artifacts. But to me, this requires deep conversation, levels of inquiry. I want to know the meaning behind it. I want to talk to the operators so I can understand context for where they are. And in the aggregate level, I want to know how our kids are doing. And then I want to disaggregate that. How do kids who are coming from high poverty households do compared to their peers in districts? How do our kids do compared to peers across the state? How do our kids who are African American, Hispanic, how do they do in our schools compared to their peers in their districts and across the state? So Robbie and his team have already started putting together a lot of this stuff, which I'm really excited about. But those are the kinds of things that I want to really deeply understand. Mm-hmm. And then talent and operations, you know, I think one of the most important things I can do is just the internal work to really get to know our team and how we work. I want to survey the operators. I want to get their feedback on the quality of what we do. You know, Paula stood up and said, here's everything I'm doing in HR. Well, I want to just test out with all the schools that we're serving. You pay 2.5% tax essentially for our services. What are you getting out of that? Hold us accountable to the quality of service we're providing you. And we should know, and in the ASD we did this, and we mapped out, we said, here's every single function that we have. Here's the number of FTEs. It might be a 0.5, it might be a 3.5, a 3.0. Here's the actual budget for this function. And then we unpacked that and said, these are the specific school supporting activities that we do under this function. And then we went to our operators and said, does this help you? And a lot of them said, you know, we already do this, and it actually doesn't help us. And so we reallocated all that back to the schools. And so I just want to commit to a process through which we deeply understand, you know, we go to work every day, how are we helping schools? And every dollar that we spend on our team and outside of the office or outside of schools on that 2% is one fewer dollar that actually could be allocated to schools. I just want to make sure we're allocating everything we possibly can to our schools. So that's really it on just detail around priorities in my first 90 days. I actually took a crack at kind of detailing the first 9 months. I won't go through all that, but it's the next slide. And you can really see how I'm starting to think about what the full year could potentially look like. And again, you know, I wish I could write this stuff in pencil because this is my second week and this is just my early thinking. And I truly want your feedback around what's missing here, what's unnecessary here, and, you know, direction from the board around things that, you know, you'd rather me be spending my time on or that you think would be a better use of our resources. So that's really it. And I encourage you to take a look at this after today and just get in touch with me and let me know what you think. And if you have questions right now, you know, I'd love to hear them.
Who do you consider operators? Would that
charter
be
operators.
A head of school, the board of that school?
Yeah,
or
I think it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the. Well, no. I mean, okay. I want to really get to know the school leader. And then, depending on their level of resource, right, they might not have an executive director. So, all of our. I think of operators as just that's the charter. And the charter, I think of as the contract. So I've gone to really thinking about the people running the school as an operator, just like a district as an operator. So when I say I want to get to know the operators, you know, when I go to lead, I basically say, hey, I'm coming. I want your feedback. And so Rodney may just want to have a one-on-one with me, or he may want to invite his board chair, and the three of us can have that conversation. So I see that as a small group where we can have a really open, candid conversation about what's going well, what needs to be improved. I wouldn't see that as, like, I went to Provost board meeting last week, and it was a little bit more high level and just, hey, what's your vision? And I said to them, hey, I'll come back, and we can have a deeper conversation where you can give me some feedback on our district. And that's probably going to be, like, two of them. So I kind of see the school leader as being that person, and if that person's wearing multiple hats, happens to also be an executive director, play other roles, then it's going to be that person. And if they want the board chair to join, then I think that's fine.
How many schools have you seen so far?
I have seen about six schools.
Do you have any initial impressions that we might be interested in?
Sure. I've heard, now I've seen six schools. At the last board meeting, I shared some feedback just on what I saw in the schools.
Right.
I was impressed with every school I saw, with the exception of one, and we talked about that. And so there's a quality of, like, the delivery of education in the schools. And then I've had now two conversations with school operators just about the district. Mm-hmm. And that's a different rubric right. that I'm using, where I'm saying, hey, just let's talk here. What's working well and what's not? What can we do better? And so I can add that information. And, you know, I heard every one of them can say, hey, this person, that person, doing a Herculean job. We love what they do. So I've gotten some really positive feedback. It's only two schools where I've had those conversations, but there are a couple of emerging themes. And one is essentially around, like, our role and clarity around, you know, the district staff and the schools, and, you know, I would say around the issue of compliance, like what we do to incent our schools to do what they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so right now, you know, you might have schools that are getting emails or letters, you know, and so I've heard a little bit of feedback around, I think, just the level of information that they're getting, the quantity of information. So we've already talked about, you know, consolidating all of our emails into one weekly operator notes, right? And so they're really excited about that. So I'm getting some feedback like that around what the district does. I think I've also heard, you know, we need help around certain things. Special education is one. It was the same thing in Tennessee. So, but it's early. I mean, my goal is true to this plan that by the end of, you know, by early December, I've had these conversations with every single operator. So I'll have that full perspective, all 32 schools.
Anybody got any questions, thoughts, comments?
I guess I have a comment. I just think the bottom line is innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And innovation to where what is being taught in these schools are making a difference with children.
Mm-hmm.
And that they are achieving at high levels.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it just boils down to.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I think that as public schools become more innovative,
mm-hmm.
and they are, it's going to really raise the bar with those charter schools to become even more innovative, because that's the whole idea. It's, you know what?
Rising tide.
Right. And it's happening across the state to where that bar is being raised, and they just have to understand that it's about innovation, not just sort of sliding back into the old ways of doing things, because that is the most amazing thing as a superintendent I ever dealt with, is that you think that people got it, and you take your eyes away from it and look here, and then all of a sudden that's gone again. Mm. And we've got to have true momentum and innovation that sticks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it doesn't go away and comes back, but it's true innovation that anyone could see and know the moment they saw it. But the bottom line is, whatever you're doing in that school enables a student to learn in high levels.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be able to articulate that.
Yes.
Or otherwise, we're just doing the same old thing with a different little twist to it.
Right.
But it doesn't have any real long-lasting change in the educational horizon in our state. And you know, that's just the bottom line.
Yeah,
right,
you're right.
I'd like to ask a question, and I hope this is the kind of jumping off that,
mm-hmm.
that once we get to our board development times, this
mm-hmm.
is the kind of conversation
yeah.
we need to be having. And we've got a lot of educators here. And when you mentioned that the bottom line is student achievement, and then mention innovation. Does innovation ever get in the way of student achievement?
It should.
Well, no, I know that.
It should.
Yeah, but
it can if it's not done well.
Right.
And see, and you know, what has always frightened me is that people will pick up the buzzwords, and they're all about the buzzwords, but there's really no substance in what the buzzwords imply. And so, and they get all into process. They get all involved in process to look like they're very busy, but the bottom line, the students are not.
Right.
So yes, it can.
Well, that was my, I think that was my question. I know in business it does. I just, you know, mm-hmm. And so that was my question. Can people get so tied up into process
yes.
that becomes a goal in and of itself?
And I think when you see that happen, it's artificial or superficial.
Right.
There's really lacking depth
right.
of what the pedagogy is or the professional development behind it or the continuous assessment that should go along with it. They just get just caught up in the word game.
Right.
I call it playing school.
Right.
I used to make a lot of people mad because I'd say you're doing nothing but playing school. Because you're just using the words.
It's like playing innovation. I think the other
right.
like distraction is the tools. So, I mean, I just, in my former career, like we might put smart boards in schools and we sort of think we're being innovative. And then you go and you see really low quality of instruction happening.
Right.
You know, half the kids not paying attention. And yet you think you're kind of innovative because you've got some tools that you just bought or that you got a grant for. But there's really no innovation in learning that's translating.
I guess that
you know, and I think
question.
That's the key. Yes, yes. Well, you know, MSA said, we asked about technology. And
yeah,
they said,
I
mean, each kid has an iPad, but we don't really use technology. Mm-hmm. Although I'd argue that what they're doing there is somewhat innovative because if you're moving kids to the 85th percentile who in their home district are in, you know, the 40th or 50th, you're doing something innovative. The way you co-teach, the way you set up your schedule, your balanced literacy program, and the whole, you know, the totality of that approach is innovating. You know, the way you select kids even, the way kids come to your door, it's something different. That's why people are looking at it.
Does this thought make sense in an education environment? When I used to go into an organization that wasn't profitable, or wasn't as profitable as it should to consult with them, and invariably they would want to, we got to do something different. We got to do something new and different. We got to rethink our strategy and our strategic plan. And what I would always do, my view was, well, wait a minute. Why don't we first assess how well you're doing what you do? Because unless you're performing with excellence at what you're already doing, a new plan isn't going to help because you won't perform it with excellence. And the key is to be excellent. It's something. And until you're excellent at something, we're not sure that what you're doing doesn't work. Maybe it's fine. But they would always want to change something. And then we would invariably end up changing some things. But what seemed to work was first make sure that we want to perform whatever we're doing excellently and get that in our minds before we start trying new tools and new approaches. Because they had to get, it seemed to me, this idea of excellence. Does that make sense in an education framework
well,
or not?
From my point of view, what I would say, can you tell me why you did it for me?
There you
can
go.
You tell
okay.
me why you did well.
Same
or
question.
Is it the luck of the draw?
Right.
And a lot of times, the test scores would come in and there'd be a celebration, but you don't know what you
didn't know why.
That was the unconscious confidence we were talking about. Yeah.
Or they dropped.
Right.
Other than was the group of kids.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Why did you drop? You can't, you don't
okay.
know your program or your strategies well enough to why.
Well, that's the same right. thought. That's the same thought I'm trying to convey.
Right.
Yeah.
I just put mine in.
Right.
The analogy that I like there that I used to think about in Tennessee was I thought about when I was a kid and you know, I never did this, but my classmates did. But on a math program, right, someone might cheat on it, right, and write the answer. And then they'd say, well, you need to show me your work. You need to show the five steps that led you. And if you couldn't do that, then you don't really deeply understand it. And I just feel like if we say to educators, can you show me your work? Can you show me how you got there? How you got your kids to 85th percentile? We had a school in Tennessee that had like 50-point gains in its first year. And it baffled our minds because when we would walk those halls, we didn't, you know, during the year, we were really worried. And, you know, these results came back, and it was a one-year thing. It was a ninth-grade academy, and they did have some phenomenal teachers. But we were kind of surprised by it. I think even that school leader would say, man, you know, I don't really know how this happened, frankly. So, anyway, if you don't know, then I feel like it's not deep learning. It's not true innovation, and okay. It's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go back to your point, because there's some things in education that are very similar, and they're almost identical, whether you're talking about education or whether you're talking about any other enterprise. Mm-hmm. And one of those is the fact, one of the things that happened in the automobile industry when they first introduced robotics and complicated technology, they discovered that productivity went down. It didn't go up. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting. They introduced all this automation to increase the level of productivity, and productivity went down. The problem in education is that happens a lot with innovation,
right.
Almost all the time with right. innovation. But in education, we frequently will abandon it immediately.
Right.
They understood this whole concept of one of the things when I first started doing consulting, one of my first jobs was with the Marine Corps, and the Marine Corps had introduced a shoulder-launched missile called the TOW missile that you could adjust in flight. You could adjust the path of the missile in flight. So you were supposed to have 100% accuracy because you could adjust the position of the missile. Really went out on the guy.
On a wire. It had a wire.
It had a wire. And they couldn't understand why they were never getting those results. They weren't getting the results because the recruits couldn't read the manuals. They couldn't read, they couldn't read the technical.
Right.
There was technical. There's technical literacy, and then there's traditional literacy. Right. And they couldn't read the manual. So they brought people in like me to work with them to distinguish. How do you teach your soldiers? And you only have 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. How do you teach them technical literacy? And all of a sudden, they start having 100% accuracy. In education, we abandon too many initiatives too soon because we don't analyze the reason for the failure. We take the failure as a loss and we walk away.
Okay.
In the automobile industry, when they were introducing robotics and all the other issues of automation, they knew the complexity of they knew that the change would require further education in the process. When I went with Stutsky, we were spending millions of dollars on innovation, and what we found was that in almost every case, the issue wasn't the value or the power of the innovation. It was the fidelity of implementation.
Right.
And that we just got through talking about that when we were talking about language immersion. Mm-hmm. When you start language immersion, your math scores inevitably go down. Reading scores go down. Why? Because you're teaching in the native language to non-native speakers.
Right.
And until your teachers are trained really how to do that, and your learners get acclimated to that, your performance goes down. So part of our biggest problem is assessment. Our weakest area in education is not the implementation, it's the assessment. We don't know what we're assessing. We're usually assessing something other than what we really want. And so we get results, and the results tell us, the paper picks up the results and says, such and such and such. We panic and we change. We go back to old practices, and the old practices go back to the old outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I never learned how to do, and I'm sure Betty did. I'm sure Wayne did. I never knew how to help the public deal with that.
Yeah.
But early stages of innovation are usually a poor level of performance. That's called, in statistics, it's called the J curve. The J curve is half of a bell curve. Mm-hmm. So when you first introduce the initiative, if you really are talking about innovation, when you first innovate, you do not have significantly improved performance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how do you convince legislators who want us to show that what we're doing is better than what's happening in a traditional mm-hmm. public school? How do you convince them? You gotta
hold on. And,
hold yeah, on. Yeah. You, yeah. yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
I did.
That yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
I have just one final thought on this in terms of deliverables. What I'd like to, and it's in here in some bullet somewhere, but at the December convening of the board, I'd love to just deliver an action plan based on my first 30 days or my first 90 days. Here's what I propose the rest of the year looks like in the January, February, March cycle and that strategic planning process. So to bring that to you based on everything that I do here, deliver that action plan to you by December before Christmas break and we can look at it.
Okay.
If that works. And I've set up with someone to talk about my superintendent certification next week. So alt cert, someone who really knows how to do that. I'm sitting down with her, Angela. Is Angela Baines? Right. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a meeting with her and I just wanted to update y'all on that as well. That's not in here, but
you can do your internship with me.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Let's make it happen.
So you don't get legal, huh?
That's right. Right. That's right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
especially dangerous.
Wanted to make a comment. As you're going to all these 32 schools, you know as well as I do, you're going to meet with 32 different board chairs, 32 different principals or head of schools or whatever. What I would request, if you wouldn't mind, eventually I assume you're going to give us some type of report back, state of the schools, whatever it is. And you're going to categorize them, you're going to chop them, you're going to tell us whatever it is.
Right, and I'll probably pull in the data that we'll get to complete that picture.
And do all of that, but I would request, if you wouldn't mind, a brand new school is going to be, have a completely different set of issues than a school that's been there for 5, 10 years. One school's hitting on all 8 cylinders, they've got good reports, good stats. Mm-hmm. The others, they are learning how to crawl. A lot of the people who are on the board may or may not be educators. It's a whole different ballgame comparing apples to aardvarks, if you will.
Sure.
If you would break down, whatever brackets you want to put it in, schools that are brand new to 2 years old or 3 years old, and just so we can maybe see a pattern, because there will be a difference.
Yes. Yeah, it's good feedback. I was actually thinking about the survey. One thing we did in the ASD is we had a survey for new schools. So all the startup stuff, site prep, getting into a building, like what role did we play in helping you in your first year? And then like for third year schools, we had it broken down by cohort. So we would actually ask different questions. Some were the same throughout all cohorts of schools, but then we had specific questions for those new start schools or first year schools. So I may approach this in the same way and present the information in a way that shows, okay, here are some kind of issues unique to this group of schools that are new versus schools that are really veterans and kind of, know what they're doing.
And then the younger ones, when we get that data, we can disseminate it. The younger ones can learn from the older ones.
Sure. Yeah, good. Thank you for that.
Anything else?
Anything else, guys?
Okay, well, before we adjourn, Wayne, if I could get you to come over here a minute. I wasn't sure what the appropriate time to give Wayne some sort of memento of his service here was, because I know December is the point, but this is a trend. So anyway, I picked this time. Somebody wants to complain. I just want to present you with this. It says, in appreciation to Dr. Wayne Brazel, superintendent, for exemplary leadership, Board of Directors, South Carolina Public School District, 2015.
Wow, so, what an honor. Thank you.
Thank you for all you've done for us.
I will let you know, Elliot and I have spent a lot of time together, and I think the board made a wise decision, and I feel like the district's in great hands. I sincerely mean that. So,
thank you.
Yeah, once he gets out of rehab, things are going to pick up.
Mr. Chairman,
Yes, ma'am.
Just one more item before we adjourn. For anybody going to Colorado who is not an experienced hiker or experienced with high altitude, start drinking water now and take, no, I'm serious, and take one aspirin per day. Keep it up for the first 2 days you're out there. That will stave off altitude sickness and not maybe totally eliminate, but mostly eliminate the nagging headache that you get when you fly into altitude. Now, Denver's not too bad, but if you're going to the high country, I would really, really recommend it.
And if you keep taking that aspirin, it'll reduce your chances of colon cancer by 30%.
True enough.
Yeah.
All right. But check with your doctor first about that.
That's right. The board does not give out medical advice.
Hold on a second. Right. I got you on record here, John.
Right.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Did you all have your bill under your door?
No.
This month? Huh?
No.
The district is being direct billed for the rooms. The only thing the board members should have charged to their credit cards is if you ordered any incidentals.
Okay, I asked them if I was being direct billed, and they said no.
You're not being direct billed for because you're
I mean, if my bill was being direct billed, to, and they said no.
Did they give you a bill run?
No, they didn't.
Can we just check with them on our way out?
Yeah. I mean, I talked to them
we'll make
this
sure.
Morning, but I'm sure.
When I checked out, they said that it went to the master account.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm
separately. They didn't get it for that either.
Okay. I did get a bill on my I got an electronic bill.
Okay.
Did you get an electronic bill?
Just trash it.
Doc, can I make one more before we adjourn?
My electronic
room?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, just one final note, somber note. I didn't want to open with this, but you may have heard Dana. Dana's mom passed away this week. The funeral's tomorrow, so I know a lot of us are going to go to the funeral, but just wanted y'all to know, you know, it's been a tough week all around. And she wanted to be here, wanted to come to the school visits, but with her mom passing away, she's up where she needs to be. So I just wanted to make sure that y'all are aware.
And along the same lines, Tasha's mom's not doing well.
Right, really, in really, really rough shape, yeah, so.
Okay.
Tough couple months, some months.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
That's right.
Now, who all is going to be in Colorado? Okay, Wayne or Elliot, who is there dinner one night being planned?
We schedule Monday night.
Monday night.
Out the location.
That's the day we get.
A hotel like we did in Miami, so.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So that'd be the first
are you in charge of the location?
for the dinner.
For the dinner.
No, I'm helping.
Okay, but I mean somebody's checking the roadmap or and everything to make sure.
Oh yeah,
sure.
You're not walking yet.
Right.
Are all of you in the conference hotel?
I think so.
Are you?
I'm not. No.
Okay.
But I was late.
Right. Okay.
Right.
But still, okay.
Maybe we could check back and see if they might have had a cancellation or something.
Yeah.
You know, just get us all in one spot.
Yeah, but we'll be notified about dinner and everything. Okay, good. Okay, I hear a motion.
Now, everybody will be there by Monday. I think some people are getting in around 5.
I'm getting in around 4 or something like that, 3 or 4.
Well, it's a good couple of hours, particularly at that time of the day in Denver, to get from DIA to Interlochen.
So you probably ought not to plan dinner till
7:30,
something like that. Yeah. Okay. Lunch is coming, or?
I got it right on.
Okay. Okay. And so do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay.
I didn't want to stop you because the resolution was there. We tried to fix that. That procedurally was a bit of a. Wasn't on the agenda.
I shared this with
the change the agenda.
Ron shared this with
the resolution is supposed to be written.
Right.
So, my suggestion is get your change to write it up.
Right.
Is that Walt now?
Back on the agenda.
Okay, that's good.
But he's,
the way things are, in so much flux.
He's
had 30 days.
It's helpful.
See how things play out.
That's Barbix. It started in one place and it's gotten here now. People saying, hey, think about this.
Understanding the difficulties of having to replace lots of it. I don't see
yes. Yeah, I did.
Wow.
He's a big time art collector. That's like in the past.
Yes. Outside of that building. so amazing. They call it the veil, and that's exactly what it looks like.
I'm going to try to get there. I'm going to go this year.
If you get with Robbie, he can get you one. We got him.